This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show. We're on the air on WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Welcome to Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We bring you issues of the day and conversations with interesting people that are in our community. My name is Emily O'Hare. I'm here with co-hosts Dick Paddock and Lori Hoyt. Today, Lori will be having a conversation with a special guest, C.J. Suit.
Thanks, Emily. We're really glad to be here, and I'm so glad to have it's a guest and a friend. C.J.
Yeah.
Suit has known each other a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And somebody that I have lots of reasons that I admire, which will be talking about the kind of work he does with young people, which is always dear to my heart and Wilf's heart. Anyhow, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It feels good to be here.
Yeah. So we haven't had you on the show for probably a year, quite a long time, but we've been going to the at Flyleaf on the first Wednesday of the month. We'll do a plug right now. The Sacrificial Poets sponsor a poetry slam. Is that what it's called?
It's an open mic.
An open mic where a lot of young and a few not so young people read their poetry, and it's got great energy, and we enjoy it so much. And so we start off, and just for people who are listening who may not know anything about the Sacrificial Poets, just give a brief intro to what.
So the Sacrificial Poets is a nonprofit based here in Chapel Hill. We work in the Triangle, though. We create safe spaces for young people to empower themselves through spoken word and performance poetry. I think that's mainly our goal. We do performances. We run a community open mic that, as you said, is the first Wednesday of every month, and usually
at 6:30. By the way,
yes, 6:30
at Flyleaf.
We start with a musical feature and then wrap up with one of our poet friends from either around the state or around the country, who comes in and blesses us with some words to close out the night. We also, around the fourth Saturday of the month, host a youth slam, which is sort of the competitive form of poetry where the kids go round for round. And the winner of that slam qualifies to be in our grand slam. And we take a group of poets, a team of poets, to international competition once a year. Every year that's a competition, festival, and a conference where they get to learn from other professional poets and meet other young people like themselves, some 400 or 500 other youth poets from around the country. So, yeah, that's the work that we do through writing workshops and performances and all sorts of stuff.
That is so exciting. And the fourth Saturday, and is that, where do you have that?
We have, it rotates. We try to give it we have kids who come out from all over the Triangle, so we try our best to have some slams in Durham and some slams in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. The next one will be on the 28th of this month here, right next door at the Arts Center here in Carrboro.
Okay.
And doors open at 6:30 for that event, and then it starts at 7 o'clock.
Okay, so, Emily, are you writing that down? Good, because we'll definitely try to go.
Yeah.
So that'll be right here at the Arts Center at 6:30, the doors open. Well, that would be really exciting to go to, because I know I've enjoyed the open mic at Flyleaf so much. Yeah, when I can get there, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're one of the ones who started, along with a few other friends.
Yeah, yeah.
The Sacrificial Poets, and after it got going, I think you've gotten some grants. You do work in the schools too.
For sure. We're supported by the Orange County Arts Council. Stroud Rhodes, there's a lot of folks around who really, really support and believe in the work. We've been doing this work probably since, I would say, since I was a young person on that same international team in 2005. And so we took up the banner. There was an English teacher named Michael Irwin who was running things at the time. Amazing English teacher here at Chapel High.
He's still here.
He couldn't do things. And so I, myself, started running an open mic and was like, I have to take young people to this thing that has changed my life. And I ended up kind of organizing a team with some friends and artists like Kane Smigo, who's now living in L.A., and Will McInerney, who's our former executive director, was a young person on that team.
Is he around, Will McInerney?
He's here. He's working on campus for the Men's Project and doing a lot of work with Title IX. And those folks working to redefine our masculinity and what it means for us as young men in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you all go in some different directions, and you talked a little bit before we came in about being in a bit of a transition yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Wanting to do some other things.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like I just turned 28 years old, and I'm starting to feel... If, you know, you're a little woo-woo, I feel like I'm in my, Saturn return and, feeling all of that, transition of being, an adult and a grown person and wanting to kind of refocus my energy towards sort of self-sustainability and a critical self-love that, challenges me to be the best person I can be all the time. And I think, you know, so that's has a lot of implications on my work, for SACPO. And so, yeah, that feels very transitional and feels like a space of growth, most of all.
Which is great, but transitions are also sometimes painful.
Yeah, you know, it's painful.
You have to let go of something to make room. Yeah, growing pains.
So
you need, sometimes of self-reflection to see just where this growth is going to lead you.
Right. I think I have some pretty clear ideas around, the things that I want to teach, given who I am in the world as a man of color, black man in the world, I'm really starting to feel a pull towards doing some work that is focused on black males, focused on black brown folks, brown people, related to storytelling, related to story sharing, but with a much more sort of laser sight on the issues that plague the communities of folks who look like me and my family, Chapel Hill's not a big place. And so when I think about the work that I do, I think I've wanted it really, really to be something that my family has access to. And so I think a lot of what's informing my transition is what is my family? What are those folks who are out 54 West and off the bus line in Chapel Hill and drinking well water and outside of the rural buffer? What are those folks really needing? And what are the spaces that need to be created for those folks to feel empowered or as if they can empower themselves in those spaces? So, yeah.
So are you literally... You have family around here?
Yeah.
Really family. Yeah, as well as friends who become sort of.
right.
Yeah. Do you have a large family?
I have a ginormous family. My dad, my last name is Suit, so Suits and Knowles. My family It's mostly, out 54 West, out Joe Mack, that area of town. And my dad has like 6 to 7 brothers and sisters. And my mom's from Eastern North Carolina, which is a little bit ways away from here, like Lewisburg, Spring Hope, Franklin County area. And she's got like tons of brothers and sisters. And,
oh, boy. So you have a lot of cousins, right?
A lot of cousins. More cousins than like I could count, you know.
Do you have sisters and brothers?
I have one brother who just had two little boys.
So you're an uncle.
I'm an uncle.
Yeah.
As of about, you know, it's been about 2 years now. One of them's one of them's two. So.
Oh, they're adorable at that age. I've got family out by Joe Mack Road.
Yeah,
that habitat development there.
Yeah.
I have a daughter lives out there.
Great. Yeah. Some of my folks are out there too.
Yeah.
Probably near your neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a family living in the same area, and you're right, the well water can be a real big issue out there with the gravel pit doing dynamiting.
Right.
It does not help wells too much out there.
Not at all.
So you came to school, though, in Chapel Hill.
I did. Came up in Chapel Hill Carbo City Schools, Sewell Elementary to McDougal Elementary. I think in the middle of my fourth grade year, I came to McDougal Elementary. They did redistricting. And then middle school, I went to McDougal Middle School for a year. And then I went to a couple charter schools. I was like a horrible sixth grader in terms of doing my homework. Like, I just never did homework. And so that was like a running joke. If you got, like, we had 6 classes. If you got, like, all Fs in all those classes, they used to say, like, you went to 6 Flags. Because you got 6 Fs. And I did that for like 4 quarters of school and just couldn't get it right. It didn't work for me. And so my mom switched me to some charter schools. I went to Woods Charter School for 7th grade and Village Charter School, which used to be by Bagels on the Hill near East Chapel Hill for 8th grade. And then I came back to Chapel High for my high school time. But
And that's where that wonderful teacher had such a...
Yeah.
You got doing some homework then.
Yeah.
Wanting to. You got so turned great. On.
That was so great. I mean, I think teachers are invaluable, you know.
Well, you know, Emily's a teacher, and that's, you know, and I have come from a family of teachers, and boy, my hat's off always to teachers. Yeah.
Could I ask you what inspired you? What did this teacher do for you? Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I was, my teacher used to have us every Monday, I believe, he used to have us like write in our notebooks for like 15 minutes or something at the beginning of the class. Just write, just to be writing. Whatever you write, you got to write something in this time. And so I was writing things. I write little poems or whatever. And I think the Black History Month program happened at school. And he came and asked me, he was like, hey, like, will you perform for this like Black History Month program? And at that point in time, I didn't know he was even reading my notebook. I was like, where is this coming from? Maybe, I don't know. And then he was like, all right, I'm putting your name down. And I performed, you know, I performed for that program, and I did this really what I felt like was a cheesy poem that was like, every other line was like, how do I do what I do? You know, deal with the haters and still stay true. You know, and like all this about, you know, just being a kid who really struggles with like kind of being himself in the context of high school and a high school in the high school hallways. And so, I did that poem, and it felt like at the end of my poem, like, you know, my whole class like stood up and like clapped for me. And I was like, what?
Oh.
Now, to be honest, it's probably only like three people, my friends or something. but it felt like, you know, right. It felt like I felt really appreciated for just being me. You know, it was the first time I didn't feel like I was posturing or imitating some other form or somebody else's writing or somebody else's sound. Like, it was just kind of me. And I think that really kind of was the sort of spark. And what continued that was my senior year getting a chance to go to San Francisco for Brave New Voices, which is the competition that we take kids to now.
And which I can see for a kid growing up in in Chapel Hill, and probably parents who weren't terribly affluent.
Right, right.
And to get this chance to go to San Francisco be around poets. And did you read one of yours there?
I did. It's very funny that the poem I did at that competition, like, I intentionally had this theatrical thing where I forget half the poem inside the poem. And I remember being there, and I had my paper with me, and I went up there, and I actually forgot the poem. And, like, I had to, like, get my paper and bring my paper back. It was like, oh, wait. People, like, clapping, and all. It was sad. But that was, like, my first slam poetry big performance experience was, like, forgetting my poem that I was supposed to pretend to forget. But
I think that was really interesting because we mentioned that earlier about at the open mic that the audience is told some cues on how to behave.
Right.
In other words, if you like in the middle of a poem, you don't clap and interrupt, but you rub your hands together, or you give some clip your fingers, some not too loud signal that you're really getting it, really enjoying it. But then it's also encouraged when the poem is finished to really give them, you know, a good approval. Because I think that's so important, like you said, when in that classroom when you first got up and some people clapped, how much that means to you when you're doing something scary like that. You know, exposing yourself and reading something that you think people could laugh at you or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's community support is so important, especially when we start talking about storytelling, story sharing, and people sort of really being vulnerable enough.
Being very vulnerable to share
those stories that oftentimes, even if they're light, we know just from poetry that sometimes the lightest poems have the sort of a very dark sort of underbelly to them.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they're light, just like the support of a community, the like, whether it's laughs or snaps or, mm-hmm. you know, just the like, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it feels good to someone sharing.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things I appreciated so much when I have gone to the open mic is how with the poets, the audiences, everybody is just so. And I think you use the analogy of church.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up like Southern Pentecostal, and I guess we'll talk about it a little bit more later on. But I think there's a lot of my church is very like, you know, patriarchal, homophobic, all that sort of stuff. But I think there was a strength to that space, or unrecognized strength to that space, is that everyone in that space recognized that there was like something going on beyond what we could experience with the five senses.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And now there was like a sixth presence or a sixth sense that was happening in the space that like in turn made you like, you know, your body have some sort of expressive response. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, I don't go to church as much anymore. Because, you know, I have different views than I came up with and I was raised with.
Mm-hmm.
But many
of us do.
right. But I do believe in that spirit that's in that space. And I think I feel that in the space of open mics. And I think that's where it comes through and comes across for me. And so, I believe the tradition of, like, call and response and slam poetry and performance poetry is very, like, for me, is very deeply rooted, like, deeply rooted, I get my words right, deeply rooted in a religious and a faith tradition of, like, testimony service and, like, hearing folks tell a story about how they got over or got through the week or something that they've been through or something they struggle with, and hearing people in the audience say, like, you know, I made it through that, too, and making noise and saying that, like, yes, I know what that's like, and I can feel that and, like, keep pushing, even if, like, some folks are still in the midst of it, right? And so, I think there is no, like, part of me that underestimates the power of just an audience or a community like vocally saying, speaking, like, and really, really giving amens to somebody sharing a story.
Yeah.
And I think it's really counter to how you think about poetry or how we think about poetry in popular culture, or these spaces or coffee houses where everyone's sitting quietly. And you can hear a pin drop or a butterfly flap its wings. You know, you can, like, we're super quiet. And you know, that sort of that quietness would be a sign of reverence for the poet. Whereas I think, you know, in our spaces, we try to flip that on its head and actually, like, you know, if you're reverencing this poet and his story, then you'll make some noise and you'll at least snap your fingers or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. I know. I went with one of my daughters some years ago to, she worked with somebody who invited her to a gospel thing at their church, a black church, and she just loved it where people gave testimony.
Yeah.
She said, you know, people don't normally get up and you know, and it, she was in tears. It just, you know, she was having some struggles of her own, and it just was so healing for her to hear other people get up and be having some similar struggles and be okay to get up and to get that support from the people in the church instead of feeling ashamed. So that is a very healthy thing. You're right. Sometimes some of these churches may have some ideas about homosexuals or about this, that, or the other that you may not agree with, but there is such a beautiful thing about how they support each other in their struggles with addictions or bad luck or losing a job or whatever it is. So you've come a long way, and now you're at the grand old age of 28.
Getting there.
And in a transition, and feeling those growing pains, which is exciting. I think you also mentioned before we came in about maybe doing some writing. Besides, I guess you're talking about maybe you've always been writing poetry, but maybe in a book.
Yeah. So I have a series of books that I'm releasing this year. We'll get started on the series this year. And just keep it going as long as I feel like we can keep it going, called Shots of Moonshine. And I did an Indiegogo for it probably about a year ago on my birthday. My birthday is November 2nd, so probably a year ago since the last birthday. And I raised like a fraction of what I needed to raise and just enough to like get the computer to do the work. And, you know, here we are about a year later and we actually have the book. It just needs to be sent off to a publisher. And so, the first of those is done. I've worked with an amazing, like, local artist to have my poems illustrated. Her name's Jacqueline Gilstrap. She's amazing. She does really awesome font work. And also just, like, she does kind of, like greeting card style work that's really amazing. And like, I think the collaboration came together so much better than I thought it would. Like, I mean, I didn't have low expectations in the first place, but you know how when you like see a thing and you're like, oh wow, this is amazing. Right. And the process really is just like, you know, I want work with artists who like I want your doodles. Right. I just want like whatever doodle comes to mind when you read the words. And so that's sort of the format for the series of books called Shots of Moonshine. The first one is sort of the title track of the book, of the series of books that has a little piece of every poem in it.
So the series that you're envisioning, so this is the first one about to go to the publisher, and the series is a series of poetry books?
Yeah, this is a series of poetry books.
And when you're talking about a series, like with the... What does that mean? I mean, so you got this one book with poems that they'll just be continuing poems as you write them?
Yeah. So for some time, I've wanted to publish my work. It's been a long time kind of coming. What I decided was that I think slam poetry or performance poetry or spoken word is very wordy. It's very wordy poetry. And I didn't want to put together a chapbook. Right. And so instead, what I'm doing is a series of books that each book will be its own poem. right?
Oh, okay.
And so each line of the book, each page of the book is a line of poetry that's been illustrated by my friend and fellow artist, Jacqueline Gilstrap.
Oh, okay, that's what you say in a series. I'm thinking, well, are you planning on just churning out so many poems? Or,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
What, or have you written so many that you can only get out 10 at a time? So, okay.
Somebody giving me more work. I can't do much work.
So each book will be a poem. That is,
yeah.
So you really take in each line and it's right. illustrated, and you really don't rush through. You really.
Right. And I really want people to be able to pick. I really am sort of in the mind of creating a coffee table type book.
Uh-huh.
And I would love for people to pick it up off the coffee table and open it up to the middle page. And whatever illustration or line on that page maybe speaks to you for the day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or really causes you to think about something different.
Yeah.
And so that's really how I've kind of broken down
the
lines. And I feel like the illustrations complement that. And, so that's the series.
Well, that's exciting. It's very different. Have you seen anything like that before?
I haven't seen anything like it, which is why I wanted to do it.
Yeah, like, before somebody else gets that idea. Don't copy this. We will come after you.
Yes.
I think Dick was giving me, when he does this, it means he's letting me know we have so many more minutes. And we're going to take a station break. And let's not get talking so much that we forget to have you read us a poem
or two. Of course. I'd love to share some pieces.
Okay. So we're going to take a station break.
You're listening to Wilf Wake Up Call on WCOMLP 103.5 FM. If you're having difficulty, you can stream us live on WCOMFM.org. Announcements?
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, I just want to say, when Emily said about if you're having difficulty, I just want to remind people this is a low-power station. And it, you know, and I know at home, sometimes it's coming in good, then it starts fading out. I mean, I'm fiddling with the antenna, but always to know, as Emily said, that you can stream it live and not have to worry about messing around with your antenna where it's pointing.
Wake Up Call is underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore, which is located on Lloyd Street in Carborough.
101.
1107.
No?
What is it?
I got it wrong. It's 101.
101.
We've been
Lloyd
giving the
Street.
Wrong number.
Wrong address. It's right off Main Street.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
right off Main Street.
Yeah.
Two doors down.
We can practically see it here from the Art Center.
Yeah, we can. Announcements now?
Yep.
Okay. The Mass Moral March and HK on J People's Assembly is going to take place on Saturday, February 14th. The pre-rally will begin at 9 a.m. on 2 South Street in downtown Raleigh, and that's across from the Raleigh Memorial Auditorium. The march to the state capitol will begin at 10 a.m., and the agenda is going to cover a multiple items that are important to us, like voting rights, health care, education, criminal justice. And
maybe a little poetry.
That would be great. Just to let you know, there's going to be a NAACP sponsored bus leaving from the United Church of Christ Chapel Hill, which is on 1321 Martin Luther King Boulevard. It leaves at 8:30. They would like you to be there by 8:15. You can reserve a seat on the bus by emailing naacp5689@gmail.com. The cost is $15, which you can pay when you're at the bus.
Yep. And I think you wanted to mention, sort of getting ready for HK on J.
Yes. Prior to that, on February 1st.
That's a Sunday.
Reverend Barber will be speaking at UNC Sonia Haynes Stone Center at 3 p.m. And that's part of his statewide tour promoting the Mass Moral March.
So that, and the Stone Center, along with some other wonderful institutions at the university, is under some threat right now because of they're being investigated to see if the Board of Governors thinks that the money is well spent. So some of our very favorite places, the Sonia Haines Stone Center, which people fought for years and were so proud of. It's a Black student union center. What is the Mark Dorson, the Justice Center? Or is it the Civil Rights Center?
The Civil Rights Center. Right.
And then the Gene Nichols Center. What is that? The Center for Poverty?
It's focused on poverty and the problems with work and poverty and something else.
So there's I think, seven different programs or institutions or whatever at the university which are some of the most important ones that are under some threat right now. So anytime you can go to the Stone Center and give support, but this is going to be particularly wonderful to go to because Reverend Barbara will be there and start getting your inspiration, a dose of inspiration for marching on February 14th. Yeah. So I think, and is there anything else? Just that anybody's always welcome to join WILF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
And we could probably give the website for Internationalist Bookstore.
Yeah.
It's internationalistbooks.org, and it's now Internationalist Bookstore and Community Center.
And what is the WILF website again?
TriangleWILF.org.
So you got all kinds of things to look up, and now we're going to go back to our guest, C.J. Soot, who is a dear friend. We've been knowing him since pretty soon after he got the Sacrificial Poets started, and we've just been so glad to know about it and to know him. And we're glad you're here. And before we forget and all of a sudden we're saying goodbye, do you want to give any kind of a website or way if people want more information?
Yeah, for sure. Sacrificialpoets.org is the website for my organization. And so anything, you can find my contact information, other folks' contact information on that website. And if you're interested in coming to a writing workshop or figuring out where we're going to be next, all that information is on the website.
Oh, it is on the website. Well, darn, wish we'd known that. We were trying to yeah. So
it's a really attractive website. And another thing you can do is you can...
Sacrificialpoets.org.
Right. And you can also book them.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a booking item on there, so you... They're very happy to come take your money
and give you some poems.
And you couldn't think of any better place to put your money.
And we do all sorts of stuff. We do school assemblies. We do one-time workshops. We do a series of residencies. We do a partnership with whatever you're teaching in your classroom, all those sorts of things, bar mitzvahs.
Christenings.
All that sort of stuff. Weddings, christenings. Just holler at us. We'll make it work.
Okay, well we'd love to hear a poem.
Oh great. Cool. I think I brought a lot of poems.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, what do I want to read today? I don't know what I want to read today.
Well, we don't have to have just one. You can pick a couple.
Cool. Yeah. How controversial can we be?
We can be as controversial as
you want. Okay, just want to make sure.
This is what's wonderful about having a community radio station.
Right.
We have free speech here, and...
Great. I think I want to do a poem that I actually didn't print out, that it's actually in my head.
Ooh, brave soul.
Yeah.
The best kind, that's true.
I think, so I'm from here. I'm from Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Just born and raised right here. And there's a poem I've been doing for a long time, and people...
One of my favorites.
Asked me why I keep doing this poem, and I was like, well, things haven't changed. And so...
This is, I think, the first time I heard you. I think it was, and you did that poem, and I was blown away.
Yeah. And so, because, because things haven't changed, and then also number two, because, like, people don't think about people who look like me when they think about Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the person on the visitor brochure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I want to work to break down those sort of stereotypes that the city has. And so that's why I keep doing this piece. And so I'm going to share this piece. I think we could just call it Lovely College Town or Chapel Hill or however you want to call it. Poems don't have titles. They just give themselves titles. Anyways.
Okay.
I grew up in a city where progress and distress go hand in hand like glove and mitt. Grew up watching egos trip on sidewalks full of wallets and money clips, a sinking ship whose captain reassures everyone to secure their belts and stay strapped in. Director yells action and we play like we don't see the props in the form of expensive shops and parking lots. Human rights on the chopping block bothers us a lot, just not enough to tell them stop. They bulldoze blocks and hide their hands, seemingly spontaneous construction, the way they roll these rocks and divide the land so fast it seems they stole the clocks and hid the sands. And on days like this, here I am. In a wonderful little college town where true feelings are glossed over with PC wax, like the floors in hospitals. When I say PC, I mean politically correct. I live in a wonderful little college town where true feelings are glossed over with PC wax, like the floors in hospitals. And the impossibles are made to seem possible. Between the hellos and how you doings, I feel the hatred brewing. As she clutches her purse a little tighter, telling herself, I'm no racist. I have black guy friends. It's just the ones I don't know I'm scared of. As if black men were pit bulls without leashes. The plight of a black man in a white town where he's only good if he's affluent or submissive, speaks proper English, and his clothes fit. Proper black man. Working a job with a dress code, no tattoos, well-groomed, is a student and or has a degree of some sort in this lovely little college town where armchair progressives are a dime a dozen and social consciousness is a verbal state of mind that really only lies in revolutionary cotton tees, dreads and blowing trees. Che is great and we love and try our best to emulate Bob Marley and Gandhi. Chapel Hill. While the predominantly black and Latino parts of the city have been reduced to a quarter of the size they used to be and or moved far away as not to tarnish the image of the university, a university that has erected a 20-foot-tall monument representing a Confederate soldier in the Civil War, Silent Sam, and less than 100 yards away is a slave monument to the builders of the university. That's a table. That has these 2-foot-high slaves holding it up. The last time I walked past was a lovely white family enjoying lunch. I say what reverence we show. Still making them be the foundation for the nourishment of this nation. Still no bill for reparations. And me in this hospital, I'm a struggling doctor. I need patience because it seems like this hospital's really an asylum. Where the upper conscious class thinks that the victims of a lower class society, then the rich lend hands to their rich artistic friends and stand over the impoverished, scratching at the insides of coffins with the lumber that built this town under our fingernails. Chapel Thrill. Where students swarm in to swap the culture they were raised on in exchange for frats and sorors, kimchi for keg stands, tamales for top of the hill, curry for curriculum, and until recently in March, until Eve Carson in March, basketball games and rivalries have been more important than murder rates. It's madness. I live in a wonderful little college town where true feelings are glossed over with PC wax like the floors in asylum. Welcome to the neighborhood. Thank you.
Wow.
It's still powerful and it's still good and it's still true.
Still
yeah. I mean, and thank you for reminding me about that statue, Nick. And it was meant well. I think it was from some class wanting something to do a good thing. But the design of it, next to this big, tall statue of the Civil War soldier, and you're right, it's like 2 foot high, this, like, load. You, when the grass is a little high, you could just trip on it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's beautifully done. It should really, I think the only way to save it would be to have it raised up on a platform.
Or put in a museum somewhere and do a real monument.
Yeah.
You know, like.
You know, if they had it where you had to look up at it a bit, you know. But the way it is, it's just so sad.
Yeah. I think I get frustrated. I work with a group, and it was part of starting a group called The Real Silent Sam that works on campus. And they're doing a lot of work now. I'm like so proud and honored to like have been a part and still a part of that organization. And they're working to do a lot of like the work around renaming the buildings and things on campus. We were more focused on that statue. And I just think there's a sort of social amnesia that happens in the space of Carrboro and Chapel Hill around like this history that we're living and breathing and walking through. And so people, you know, I've been told after I do that poem, so many people have come up to me and they're like, I've been in that in McCorkle Place so many times. I've been out there before and I never thought to compare those two statues. And so for me, like, you know, that's my history. You know, the Silent Sam is a Confederate Civil War soldier and this is a slave monument. How do we not compare those things?
Absolutely.
How are those two things not in the same conversation, right? And so I think, you know, there is like no, like, I don't think there's a desire to per se shame folks who are living right now. But I think in the interest of moving forward in conscience and in like in a real, real awareness of our history, it needs to be talked about, you know, like UNC, the liberal arts college has like, you know, buildings named after Confederate Civil War
Ku Klux Klan leaders.
Yeah, Grand Dragons of the North Carolina Ku Klux Klan. And so a lot of the Real Silent Sam work is around like renaming Saunders Hall specifically, who is just named for William L. Saunders, who's Grand Dragon of the North Carolina Ku Klux Klan. And like, you know, and it's a geography building. And if we start thinking about racism and how racism became at post-Reconstruction and during Reconstruction became something that was very geographical. Yeah. It, like, starts to be very diabolical, the way in which, like, things get named and monuments get built. You know, Silent Sam is built in 1913, some 50 years after the Civil War or Emancipation Proclamation. And so, yeah, it's, like, a very, very sort of insidious, diabolical thing that, like, you know, folks are still trying to perpetuate, but then when we bring those things up, a lot of times they're like, what do you mean? It's just like, you know, we just want to remember our people who sacrificed. And like,
they didn't, but I just got to ask you something. Did you know Yanni Chapman?
I did. And Yanni Chapman actually commissioned myself and Haley Koch to do a historical reenactment of Freedom Rides.
Yes, so Yanni Chapman was a WILF member, staunch WILF member. And he had died a few years back at a relatively young age. And that was his big thing. And his thesis, his PhD thesis, was on civil rights and the history in Chapel Hill and the university. I mean, that's the first one I found out about, Saunders Hall being named.
Yeah.
You know, and that Lucy, what was her name, that award they were giving to the Bell Award.
I don't remember her name very clearly. I think it was
Lucy,
called the Bell Award.
Yeah, the Bell Award, and I thought that she had rung the bell, that they had closed it during the Civil War, and she rung the bell after the Civil War to say it's open.
Right.
No, that was not the true history. The history was that they closed it in Reconstruction because then they would have to have blacks going.
Right.
So they kept it open mostly during the war, but closed it during Reconstruction. And when she rang that darn bell was because Reconstruction was essentially ended in the Jim Crow era was going to begin. So that's, and they were given that Bell Award. Nobody really, till Yanni got put it in their face, we would go out there and be having leaflets on campus. Mm-hmm. And the women who were supposed to be an honor to the top woman scholar on campus, one of the faculty members, top faculty member. And once we did that by the second year or third year, they refused to take the award. They had to stop that award.
Yeah.
So you knew Yanni and worked with him.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, I stand on his shoulders and the work of so many other folks here who've, like, you know, done the civil rights work, laid the groundwork for, you know, me to even be received when telling my story and the places that I've been received here. And, you know, I am so thankful for Peace and Justice Plaza, which you did a lot of work for to make that happen. That would not have happened without the work of Yanni Chapman. And him, like, you know, as a young poet, like, being like, I want to contract you all to do a historical reenactment of the 1947 Freedom Rides with, like, Bayard Rustin. And then we're going to bring down George Hauser from New York to be a part of it. And so, like, that was, like, an honor. I think I was just such a, like, a kid, so to speak, at the time and didn't realize what I was doing or what I was a part of. We, like, segregated the audience in Hargraves, which is, like, totally unheard of. And, like, you know... And folks were very resistant to that initially. That was a very interesting time. I'm so...
Very interesting, yeah.
So, like, thankful to Yanni Chapman for getting me kind of started on the path of, like, being sort of an activist, to get me plugged in to really do the work in a major way here.
Yeah. And teaching us all the history, that a lot of it you just sort of take for granted. Also, you know...
Yeah.
Didn't know what it meant.
Right.
He's probably some good guy
just
in the past.
Name,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Anyhow, I don't want us to get off on Yanni and lose track.
Yeah.
You're our guest today. So thank you for that poem. Yeah.
I owe him a poem. So I think I talked a little bit about men, folks, and so I'm going to read two pieces for you.
Okay.
Back to back. Can we do that?
You can do whatever you want.
Two pieces back to back.
So we're going
to do two, and then I'm going to do one more, and then that way we can just talk it out.
Okay.
All right? So number one, like, I think, like, we as men folks on the planet are reaching a sort of awareness of our, like, hurt. I would call it hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I do work in California. Around conflict resolution for fourth and fifth graders from time to time with an organization called the Mosaic Project. And what we say during that work is hurt people hurt other people. And so I think a lot of what we see in violence and war, violence against women, sexual assault, all this sort of stuff is happening because men are tremendously internally hurt, right? And so I'm trying to, like, flesh that out a little bit in my writing. And so this is kind of like a free write.
Wow.
And so... I wrote this in the space of a bar somewhere here in Carrboro, the station, somewhere, OCSC, some bar here in Carrboro. And it's really like I said, it's in process. And then we'll read one more poem.
Okay.
That's about church.
Okay.
Cool. It's a natural progression.
Yes.
All right. And church. The boys are so obvious. So obvious in their intentions. This Friday night, they are linear, straight. It is obvious he will want what he has paid for, offered what he considered resource, a drink. She does not come here for the flowers, the pretty lies, fragile stem one-liners. My uncle says women like flowers because they have them. He has come with scissors and sharp tongue. The men... We are predictable. It is our world, made in our image. From nipple tassels to master's degree, angles and order, cocks and boxes, I know what we are thinking. So does she. Can hear it on the radio. A father's song takes the foreground. Ask no questions. My body will not lie to itself in word or deed. resisting is sexy. I mean, pretending to resist is sexy. Can feel it. Rock hard and throbbing. Begging for attention. Wrong kinds of dimensions. She is a box I will fill and she will love me for it. I will be empty. Hear her voice bouncing off the corners of my ribcage. We will die inside each other. Shed mourning and pretend the day is new. Trapped in a patriarchy nightmare. The socially illiterate boys talk with their eyes. These are not polite conversations. Makes the ladies feel naked. Not sure if there is such thing as a positive masculinity. The guitarist speaks of good men, how they are lost. Hard to find, he says. Sometime later in the song, he speaks of being a traveling man, having a girl, sweet little pet, queen. I'm sick of not being able to touch you without the silence speaking over us.
Whoa. Oh.
That's one. One poem.
It's going to make me keep away from bars.
No, it's interesting. It's not, they're not, okay. Yeah, they're yeah, not yeah. All bad.
No, no, no.
I was there that night, too. writing in the bar.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
This last poem, it started as a prayer. Ended up being a poem. It came from two conversations. One conversation with my parents, in which there was been an awesome article that just was written by this that came up on Jezebel. But my parents were talking about tights and how girls are wearing tights to get the attention of men, and that like it was all about showing off their bodies to men folks, right? And me being a teacher and working in all schools around the state, I know it is like a fashion thing. It's what girls want to wear. It has nothing to do with showing out their bodies to men. Some of them are coming from yoga, you know, and like that's what they're wearing, right? Or they're playing sports, and that's what they're wearing. Not to mention that like nobody complains that football players wear tights, right? But all of a sudden it's a problem that like girls are wearing tights, right? So that conversation, and I think there's a point in all those conversations, especially with my family, around things like this, where someone in the conversation or in the room says, well, God says, and then the conversation ends. And you can't say anything else, right? Because God said this, right? And it's next, right? So there's that conversation. And then the other conversation I have with some of my science friends who, like, can't have a conversation about God at all or the existence of a higher power at all, which is also very frustrating to me. So I wrote this poem. It is my world. It processes with me. If I stop, it stops. Keep moving. Keep pushing. When they say it should all be the same. When they say God said it. When they say God is it. When they say God believes it. When they say God is white. When they say God is man. When they say God is jealous, vengeful, wrathful. When they say God would have it that way, like God is in the line at Burger King. When they say God believes in me. When they say God lives in a book. When they say God is Christmas. When they say God and evolution are two different things. When they say God don't dance, don't curse, don't party, don't drink, don't hang out with people who don't shout out his son by bumper sticker, tattoo, or other bodily accessory. When they dismissively say God helps those who help themselves. When they say who God is, when they claim who God was, when they legislate who he will be, when they say God hates fags, when they say God don't make people like that, when they say God is not the stone, not the tree, not the synaptic gap, when they say God is not nebula and stardust, when they say God is from Earth, when they say God is from another planet, when they say God is the government, when they say God is not the government, when they say it is God's will, when they say God let them die, decided we should live, when they say God don't give handouts, but he do give bailouts, when they say God believes in competition and natural selection, when they say God believes in oil and fracking, when they kick dirt in your face and spit cleanliness is next to godliness onto your food stamps, when they say God is only Jesus, only Buddha, only Muhammad, when they say God is our father and deny the nebula and womb, when they say God hates your lifestyle, And they really mean you. When they say God hates you, and they really mean your lifestyle. When they say God hates your boyfriend, hates your girlfriend, says your brother's transgendered body is an abomination. When they say God hates, 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 when they say God kills, believes in war, eugenics massacres, the NSA in Guantanamo Bay. When they say God believes in predator drones and standardized testing and neighborhood schools and voter ID and covered women and loud men, when they say God don't like sex, don't have sex, it's not both infinite and intimate, when they say God is not science and string theory, when they say God gave men all the hard and authority and women all the soft and obedient, when they say Lord knows and we don't, when they say they found him, like God was lost somewhere in a segregated sandbox. When they say God is intolerant, progressive, Democrat, Republican, independent. When they say God made us in his image. When they say we were not given a God made in man's image, a jealous God. A God that needs to be served, worshipped, praised, a human God. It is our world. It processes with us. If we stop, it stops. Keep moving. Keep pushing. Even when they say it should all be the same.
That was wonderful. And it reminds me of, I heard this clip on the radio today. One of our best scientists, and I didn't catch his name, has died. And he was one. He discovered the laser, and he was working. He was one of the ones. He became an astronomer when he's a little older, and they found the black hole. Yeah. He was one of these curious, wonderful people, but he was also deeply religious. And in an interview, he had said, "Science is when you're trying to understand the whys." Religion is what you look to for finding meaning, why we're here, meaning in life. And science tells us the facts of it. I've screwed it up. But it was good. He had it really, it was so true. You know, the science has its place, but he says they do intersect.
Yeah, definitely.
And he was one of our best scientists, and he was also a deeply committed Christian. I just love when you were talking about that. I thought, there are some evolved people who can handle both.
It's yes and.
Yes and.
Which is
yes and.
Quote of my friend Colette, but yes and all day.
That was wonderful. I think I'm going to rate that right up there with about Chapel Hill being a little college town.
Thank you.
I'm growing up in a very religious Catholic household and going to Catholic schools and then at a certain point leaving, but still struggling with coming to peace with all of that in my spiritual life. I just really resonated to that poem.
Thank you so much.
We just have a little bit of time, I think two more minutes. So
2 minutes.
Is there anything we want to know about your book when it comes out?
Yeah, you will know about my book. Just Speaking Intangibles. I know this Friday on campus at 12:30 p.m., maybe get there at 12, at the Silent Sam Monument. There's a Kick Out the KKK rally on campus where they're going to talk about the renaming of Saunders. We want to name it Hurston Hall for Zora Neale Hurston, who went to UNC also. Or name it something else for somebody else who's not a Grand Dragon of North Carolina Ku Klux Klan. There's a rally for that. They're going to do a reenactment of the dedication speech.
At 12? On campus.
On campus.
At the Silent Sam.
Friday. This Friday.
On Friday, rather. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you want to get out?
And that's it. Going to our open mic is next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, we plan to come.
Yep.
And then Saturday the 28th,
we'll be here at the Art Center for Youth Poetry Slam as well.
Okay, that's going to be February 28th.
Yeah.
February 28th. Okay, you wrote that down.
Right.
Okay, great. I did. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to be here.
Really. Wonderful to talk. to
yes.
catch up with you and,
yes, yes,
and
yes.
Hear about your transition, which is a growing pain thing, and we're excited for you about getting a book.
Yeah,
I've wondered when and if you would get a book out.
Yeah.
And next week, we are going to have Lori Clark.
Yay!
From the school system, working with the Blue Ribbon Program, and she's also going to talk about her